Hi, this is Kendall Boyson, professional life and recovery coach, and you're listening to Encouragementology, the practice of instilling hope. Hi there. Thanks for joining me. On this show, we are preparing for a new year and a new you. No. Why does everyone feel this push to reinvent themselves at the beginning of every new year? Push, or maybe I should say peer pressure. It's like you come sliding in under the wire at the end of a year with all sorts of promises to better yourself if you could just start over with a new year. How can you get in touch with your authentic self if you're always feeling less than adequate? In fact, so subpar that you actually are looking for ways to become a whole new person. What a roller coaster of shame, regret, and false promises. I say no. Don't start over. Instead, commit to exploring what makes you, you, nurturing what needs attention, and then sharing your gifts with others. Are you ready to dissolve the resolution and step out on an exciting path of self-discovery? What are your typical New Year's Eve resolution go-tos? And most importantly, what is the motivation? Guilt? Peer pressure? Dissatisfaction? Never set a goal without a strong personal reason. Well, I should say, never set a goal in which you plan on being successful without a strong personal reason. You won't follow through if it's to please anyone else because you feel pressure to do so or if you're just following a crowd. Now, you can set a goal to lose weight, get fit, or take better care of yourself. But first, uncover the personal meaning to you. Define what success looks like and be honest with yourself about your expectations. Dr. Susan Wojcicki tells us about why New Year's Eve resolutions don't work in an article she wrote for Psychology Today. It's estimated that less than 10% of New Year's resolutions are actually achieved. That came from the University of Scranton psychology professor John Norcross. There's a lot of homespun folksy advice out there this time of year about how to make sure to reach your New Year's goals. But here is the actual science of how to change behavior. There are two main lines of brain and behavior science that influence New Year's resolutions: the science of habits and the science of self-stories. Let's start with the science of habits. A lot of New Year's resolutions have to do with making new habits or changing existing ones. If your resolutions are around things like eating, maybe eating healthier, exercising more, drinking less, quitting smoking, texting less, spending more time unplugged, or any of the other automatic behaviors, then we're talking about changing existing habits or making new habits. Habits are automatic. They're automatic conditioned responses. You get up in the morning, you stop at Starbucks for a pastry and a latte. You go home at the end of a workday and you plop down in front of the TV. Here's what you need to know about the science of changing existing habits or making new ones. Now, contrary to popular opinion, it is not hard to change habits if you do so based on science. To change a new habit, you essentially have to create a new one. So whether you're changing an existing habit or creating a new one, the scientific method for doing so is the same. You have already created literally hundreds of habits that you have now, and you don't even remember how they got started. So creating habits can't be that hard, or you wouldn't have so many. To create a new habit, you have to follow these three steps based on BJ Fogg and Charles Duhigg. You must pick a small action. Get more exercise is not small. Eat healthier is not small. This is a big reason why New Year's resolutions don't work. If it's a habit and you want a new one, it must be something really small. For example, instead of getting more exercise, choose to walk a third more than you usually do. Or take the stairs each morning to get to your office, not the elevator. Or have a smoothie every morning with kale. These are relatively small actions. You must attach the new action to a previous habit. Figure out a habit you already have that's well established. For example, if you already go for a brisk walk 3 times a week, then adding on 10 more minutes to that existing walk connects the new habit to the existing one. The existing habit, go for a walk, now becomes the cue for the new habit, walk 10 more minutes. Your new stimulus response is go for a walk, followed by add 10 minutes. Your existing habit of walking through the door to your office can now become the cue or stimulus for the new habit of walking up a flight of stairs. Your existing habit of walking into the kitchen in the morning can now be a stimulus for your new habit of making a kale smoothie. See how it works? You must make the new action easy to do for at least the first week. Because you're trying to establish a conditioned response, you need to practice the new habit from the existing stimulus from 3 to 7 times before it will stick on its own. To help you through this 3 to 7 times phase and make it easy as possible, write a note and stick it, let's say, in your walking shoes that says, "Today, your total walking time is 30 minutes. You could also write a note and put it next to your keys that say, "Today, don't forget, use the stairs." You could put kale in the blender and have all your smoothie ingredients ready to go as soon as you open your fridge. If you take these 3 steps and you practice them 3 to 7 times in a row, your new habit will be established. Now, let's tackle the science of self-stories. The best, and some would say the only way, to get a large and long-term behavior change is by changing your self-story. Everyone has stories about themselves that drive their behavior. You have an idea of who you are and what's important to you. Essentially, you have a story operating about yourself at all times. These self-stories have a powerful influence on decisions and actions. Whether you realize it or not, you make decisions based on staying true to your self-stories. Most of this decision-making based on self-stories happens unconsciously. You strive to be consistent. You want to make decisions that match your idea of who you are. When you make a decision or act in a way that fits your self-story, the decision or action will feel right. When you make a decision or act in a way that doesn't fit your self-story, you will feel uncomfortable. If you want to change your behavior and make the change stick, then you need to first change the underlying self-story that is operating. Do you want to be more optimistic? Then you'd better have an operating self-story that says you are an optimistic person. Want to join your local community band? Then you'll need a self-story where you are outgoing and musical. In his book, Redirect, Timothy Wilson describes a large body of impressive research of how stories can change behavior long-term. One technique he has researched is story editing. Write out your existing story. Pay special attention to anything about the story that goes against the new resolution you want to adopt. So, if your goal is to learn how to unplug and be less stressed, then write out a story that is realistic, that shows that it's hard for you to de-stress, that you tend to get overly involved in dramas at home or at work. Now, rewrite the story. Create a new self-story. Tell the story of the new way of being. Tell the story of the person who appreciates life and takes time to care for themselves. The technique of story editing is so simple that it doesn't seem possible that it can result in such a deep and profound change. But the research shows that one rewritten self-story can make all the difference. We all have a desire to set goals, better ourselves, let go of habits and behaviors that no longer serve us, and adopt new and healthy ones. Conditioning has made a bottleneck of pressure to change right around the start of a new year. New year, new you. I think before you add something new to the mix, you have to first figure out what you're dealing with. And to do that, it might require some self-exploration. Finding the authentic you is about peeling back the layers you've created to please the world around you and the people in it. So where do you start? How do you explore and discover the real you? Sitting in a room meditating may not give you the practical knowledge you're seeking. You might have to get out there and see what makes you tick. Well, over at solutionstoallyourproblems.com, Annie wrote, "How to find your authentic self when you've lost yourself in pleasing others." Number one, learn to meet your own physical needs. What does meeting your physical needs have to do with finding your authentic self? The two may seem completely unrelated, but one is a prerequisite for the other. A big part of finding your authentic self is finding out what you like. So think about it. What brings you joy? Now, what brings you happiness? And the answer is nothing as long as you're not making your physical well-being a priority. People pleasers are so focused on other people and meeting other people's needs that they often neglect to take care of themselves. Taking on too much, not getting enough rest, failing to set aside time for exercising or cooking healthy meals. But here's the thing, your authentic self will not emerge if you're sleep deprived and stressed out. You can give yourself all the authentically you activities in the world, but if your body is not feeling well, your mind won't feel well either. So start giving your body some love. Make your physical well-being a priority. Make your body a vessel that your authentic self can thrive in. Number two, give yourself space. Finding your authentic self requires focusing inward, focusing on yourself, at least for a while. This may sound obvious to some, but it can be incredibly hard for people who have spent their entire lives focused on other people's needs and demands. To make it a tiny bit easier, I hereby give you permission to do these two things. Number one, distance yourself from people who destroyed your authentic self. You will not find your authentic self among the people who destroyed it in the first place. When your authentic self first emerges from the ground, it will be a fragile seedling, and you don't need narcissists and abusers stepping on it and destroying it all over again. Your authentic self would need nurturing care, so distance yourself from the people who are not capable of giving you just that. It may be that you just need to distance yourself temporarily until your authentic self is strong and mature and can withstand the pressure. But sometimes, the only way to move forward is to permanently cut ties to your painful past. Also, set aside time for yourself. You need to give yourself time to explore. You're literally going on a quest, an expedition, a treasure hunt, and it will take time. You need time to read, to ponder, to try new things. If you're sharing your life with loved ones, the non-abusive kind, let them know what you're doing and why you need to take some time for yourself, at least right now. They love and want the best for you, so they'll understand. Number 3, open yourself up to the possibilities. You have been taught that there is only one right way to be. If you think of yourself like an outfit you wear, then they handed you one uniform and told you to mold your body to fit that uniform, even if it was too big or too small or too itchy for your body. But whoever taught you that there is only one uniform was wrong. Narrow-minded and oh so wrong. There are actually more than 7 billion right ways to be human. So pretend that you're going shopping for a new way to be. If you're looking for new clothes that fit better than your old uniform, you could walk around the stores and you could see what else is out there, browse the racks for an outfit that fits you better than your uniform you were handed. An outfit that doesn't scratch or constrict. An outfit in which you can move through the world in comfort. An outfit you can be proud to wear, like it was custom made for you. So go shopping for a new way to be with your eyes and mind wide open. Who could you be? What variations of humans are there? For many people, the purpose of personality tests and self-awareness exercises is simply to bring their authentic self to the forefront of their consciousness and to give them words to describe it. These people may already be living mostly in alignment with their authentic selves, and the tests and exercises simply reinforce what's already there. For people who have been taught that there is only one right way to be, learning about personality variations can serve as an eye-opener in terms of what is possible. Look, there are many ways to be, and they're all okay. What inborn personality traits could you have? What are the natural strengths and weaknesses that might be yours? All a part of learning who you are before you try to change it. Number 4, try on different selves. As if you were trying on outfits, try on different activities and lifestyles and ways of being until you find the pieces that fit you the best. Try reading books on different topics, new hobbies and activities. Try being with different types of people. Try being alone. Your authentic self is not some magical being you will find in your past. Your authentic self is in the present, in what makes you feel well today, in the here and now. You will find your authentic self by experimenting in the here and now, following these 3 guidelines. Number 1, ignore what you can do well. Note that what you are good at is not the best clue at this point. You will not find your authentic self in the skills you've acquired to please other people. Some of your current skills may match your natural strength, or they may not. Number 2, follow what makes you feel well. Instead of following what you can do well, it's more informative to follow what makes you feel well. When you're acting in opposition to your authentic self, you're putting on an act. And putting on an act takes effort. It's tiring and stressful. It's uncomfortable. Even if you're used to it and you've been doing it a long time, it feels off. And you're not content. When you're acting in alignment with your authentic self, there may be an initial period of awkwardness, as there is with any new thing, but the prevalent feeling is peace and calm, a natural flow, contentment, excitement, a knowing that you are doing the right thing for you. Number 3, push through the feelings of guilt and selfishness. Peace and calm and flow and guilt. Annie says, I grew up in an environment where tangible acts of service and tangible results were valued. Cooking, cleaning, fixing. The world that my authentic self is most comfortable in. The world of abstract ideas, however, was not tangible and therefore not valuable. You can't eat it or touch it or see it. So to this day, whenever I sit down at my desk to write, I feel a pang of guilt. Shouldn't I be washing the dirty dishes first? Shouldn't I fold the laundry? Shouldn't I pick up the toys off the living room floor? Am I being selfish? Am I a selfish person for wanting to do something that feels so good to me? These questions flood my mind for a moment. But what I've come to realize is that these questions are not coming from me. These are the voices of the past, and I don't need to let them dictate my actions today. So I sit down at my desk to write. I tell myself, no. No, I shouldn't do the tangible things first. And no, I won't let the guilt stop me. Someone else's authentic self thrives on a sparkling kitchen sink and folded laundry. But my authentic self thrives on the words I put together to make sentences. My act of service is in feeding people's minds, not their bodies. To arrive at my peace and calm, I need to break through the wall of guilt I was trained to feel. And that's what you need to do too. Maybe you were trained to be practical when your authentic self wants to delve into dreams and ideas. Or maybe you were trained to be academic when your authentic self just wants to use their hands. Either way, push through the feelings of guilt and let yourself do whatever makes you feel well. Number 5, know when you have arrived. Your authentic self is a sum of many parts. You won't find all the parts at once. They will come to you one at a time. And one day, you will have found all the parts that make you feel whole. Maybe not all the parts, but enough. Like, enough to know what makes you feel good. Enough to know where moments of hope and happiness can be found. Enough to know that you are on the right path for you. And remember that it's your path that you're following and nobody else's. Self-discovery is the fun part, but so many people are scared away from delving in and getting to know themselves for fears of facing their past. Would it help to know that your past cannot be undone? Facing your past doesn't mean reliving it. It means acknowledging it, claiming your responsibility, forgiving yourself and others, and then allowing yourself to move on. The past doesn't have to be packed up and moved from place to place like grandma's china. You can decide to leave it where it is and continue on unencumbered. Think about it. Who else is holding on so fiercely? So we've explored. Now, let's nurture. Does this mean regular massages, manis, and pedis? Well, it could be, but let's go deeper than that. What do you need? If you weren't putting everyone else's needs first, which of your own would you address? Do you need to take better care of your health, emotional well-being, financial stability, or spiritual growth? These are all needs that need time and attention to become stronger. But how in the world can you find time to do all that? Well, the answer is you can't. Just like we discussed in the beginning, start with a small action and build from there. be honest and kind with yourself. For too long, we've given standard excuses like, I'm fine, I don't need anything, I have too much to worry about me. Stop the excuses and take a step out in a healthy new direction. Well, Rachel Wolf from alovingplace.com wrote herself a letter as a mantra for better self-care. Why not make a commitment to yourself? Dear self, today I will make a commitment to take 30 minutes or more a day for me. In that time, I will not have my phone on and I will do everything in my power not to be distracted by the outside world. I will use this time to show myself love, respect, care, and loyalty. I will do this because it is exactly what I deserve. I will not be too busy and ignore my own personal needs. I know that by being there for myself, I will be able to show up more for all the other people in my life. I will have a clear vision of who should and shouldn't stay in my life. I'm taking care of myself because I have a responsibility to myself in order to live the best life possible and fulfill my purpose with love and integrity. I've seen what happens when I don't take care of myself and how it affects all the people in my life. By committing to myself, I'm committing to the betterment of all. I promise to be aware and pay attention to the signs when I'm not taking care of myself. I will not be hard on myself or abuse myself in any way. I will find my way to take one step in the right direction to put the focus back on me and commit to my journey 1 hour at a time. I know I need to slow down and be present, so I will commit to taking 3 deep breaths as part of being there for myself. This gives me enough time to slow down and reevaluate the situation. I'm worth the care I give to everyone else. I'm worth the love I give to everyone else. I'm worth the respect I give to everyone else. I'm also worth the compassion I give to everyone else. From this day forward, I will give myself these things by taking good care of me. I know the more time I give myself, the more space will open up for positive things to come into my life. I will no longer be wasting my energy on being the victim of what everyone else wants. I will be the champion for me. I will give to others in a way that fills me up and doesn't deplete me. This is the reward for taking care of myself. It is not my business how other people take this change. I must trust that others will have their own journeys through it. Some may realize how much they can do for themselves by not depending on me. Others may get angry and walk away. Then there will be those who will be happy to see me make better choices for myself. No matter what the case, I need to do this for me. If I do it for anyone else, I will fail. This is my journey. I trust that whatever the result is with the people around me, it will be what is best for me. I will be gentle with myself. I will make mistakes as I figure out what works and what doesn't. I won't use that something isn't working as an excuse to give up. I will simply make a new commitment and move on. I understand that just because something works for someone else doesn't mean it's the right fit for me. It is my job to customize my own self-care program. The goal is to feel better about who I am, where I am, and how I am. I know this can only happen by taking care of myself because no one else can know me if I don't know me. I want to project to the world the magnificent person I am. Today, I commit to me. With lots of love and gratitude, a better me. Don't you wish it were that easy to say it, claim it, and then follow our own advice? Who knows you better than you? If that answer isn't you, then take that as a cue you need to stay on your quest for self-discovery. While you're out there, keep your eyes open for trust, the ability to trust yourself. Oh, and by the way, there is no final destination or endpoint. The journey is ongoing and will only feel like a drudge if you let it. For others, they will find the exuberance in getting to know more about themselves, their passions, and their purpose. This brings me to the last point, sharing. Sharing your gifts with others. It isn't the final step in the process and one you're supposed to wait until you've gathered all your gifts. Sharing is ongoing. As you learn, you share. And guess what's even better? You can actually learn more through sharing. Sarah Williams shares her story of sharing in an article she wrote for addictedtosuccess.com. Sharing is caring. 6 scientifically proven ways helping others can improve your life. I've come to believe that the simple formula for happiness and success in life lies in caring about others, helping them in any way we can, and sharing what we have. I learned this the hard way. In the beginning, when I was striving for career success, better relationships, improved overall health, and mental well-being, I thought others had nothing to do with it, that it's a battle I had to win on my own. She says, with this mindset, I made my life more complicated and didn't improve personally, spiritually, or professionally at any time. Then I decided to give another approach a try, to make other parts of my journey in small ways, but do it every day. I began talking to both strangers and people in my surroundings more, opening up, sharing my goals and giving them advice, or simply listening to their problems and showing compassion. I stopped investing my time only in me activities and began doing we activities. That could be seeing someone in need or spending time with them, even if I didn't feel like it. Becoming more active in local community, volunteering even. All that paid off tenfold because I received so much in return that my career, happiness level, relationships, and peace of mind were all improving. After experiencing the wonderful benefits of helping others, I did my research and found out all these positive effects were actually science-backed. So let me share how sharing and caring can improve your life and maybe inspire you to start doing more for others. Number 1, helping others is good for your health. I'll begin with the health benefits of caring about others. Doing something altruistic leads to positive psychological changes, strengthens the immune system, and can even reduce pain thanks to the release of endorphins in the brain. I started volunteering many years ago and had the chance to experience those benefits firsthand. Turns out, volunteers often live longer and have a better general health than those who never get involved in giving to others. I believe it's the little things that matter. Being there for a person in need is one example. That is, if you choose a cause that involves direct communication with the less fortunate, of course. Nothing compares to seeing another human being open up and realizing no one ever listened to that person, not many cared, and that he or she might not know what compassion looks like. So when you give them exactly that by simply keeping them company, you can see the transformation in their eyes. As a result, it changes you too. Number 2. It helps you handle stress better. We all have stressors in our lives, whether we admit it or not. But little did I know that the solution to this too was hidden in volunteering. Once I began doing more for others and focusing less on my own desires and needs, my mental health improved. I found meaning. I felt good about myself. And signs of depression, stress, and anxiety started disappearing. Researchers have proven that too, and state that because of this, volunteering can increase your lifespan. Number three, we form a deep connection with ourselves thanks to sharing. Giving is a way to connect with others, but it also helps us get to know ourselves better, forgive ourselves, and be more compassionate. Ultimately, that leads to feeling good about ourselves and forming a deeper connection that then helps us live a purpose-driven life. We appreciate everything more when we volunteer. It changes our perspective. It's proven to distract us from our own personal problems and help us deal with the hardships in life. I can't count the many deep conversations I've had with people I wanted to help, and that meant more for them than any food they were given that same day. It's because they forgot what real connections look like, and once they experienced it, their souls were reborn. But there were also many examples from my volunteering experiences where we just sat there with the person and connected on a deeper level without saying a word. As you know, words aren't always necessary, but energy can't be wrong. That person in front of me felt like I was there to give without expecting anything in return and simply accepted my good energy and sent back gratitude. Number four, doing good for others improves our social life. Along with a better relationship with ourselves, we who volunteer also have a better social life. It all begins by noticing a new form of social connection once we start helping those in need. That might lead to friendships that last longer. But even if it's just for the sake of making somebody smile after serving them a meal at a shelter, it's all for a good cause, and we socialize in the most genuine way possible. As multiple studies have suggested, we are social beings, and the more interactions we have in our life, the better the condition of our brain. Number five, increased happiness levels. Nothing has ever made me feel more thankful for what I already have than giving. Helping others somehow opens our eyes to how little other people might have, and we feel like we live in abundance. Then we begin cherishing all the people in our life, our own body, our own mind, and each of our precious days on this planet more. We use our time more effectively, do things we love, and socialize. Every time you do a good deed for others, you get a feeling of euphoria. That's the endorphins released in the brain, and you feel great. Such a mental boost is even addictive, and we seek more of the same feeling once we get to experience it. People in need can't fake it, and they also can't hide their happiness. So you are sure they are truly thankful and pleasantly surprised when you go the extra mile. I saw this when I stayed with them longer than planned, and they knew I just wanted to be there with them more than anywhere else. Number six, give more for better relationships. Last but not least, I noticed that giving is good for my relationships. That too is scientifically proven. One reason is the spiritual growth we experience as a result of giving more. We find meaning and fill the void inside. We are now complete and braver. That boosts self-esteem. Another great benefit of helping others, which affects our already existing relationships in life, is the gratitude we are filled with. That transforms into caring about anyone around us more, appreciating their company, and making every minute with them count. My loved ones immediately noticed I treated them better, with respect, listened more, and complained less. I hope these science-backed points will motivate you to find little ways to help others today. Our mission in life is not always sure, but it is connected to going beyond ourselves. And that's exactly what I did, which I consider a turning point in my life. Share, learn, and grow. If you feel like you've hit a plateau in your development, your journey has become stale, feeling like more of a drudge, reach out and learn from others. Share your own story to build stronger connections. Whether you're sharing or learning, you're always growing. Find a group, online or in person. There are plenty of support groups, book clubs, hobby clubs, and so on. Connecting with others gives your life much needed perspective and new ideas. If you want to share Encouragementology with a friend who needs to know they are not alone in this journey of self-discovery, you can visit encouragementology.com or anywhere you stream your content to receive this episode and all others. Find us on Facebook for additional encouragement throughout the week. So I challenge you, make this a year of self-discovery to be reacquainted with your authentic self. Explore, nurture, and share your gifts with others to unlock additional opportunities. You are important and deserve added focus, time, and attention. I know you can do it. Thank you for listening to Encouragementology with Kendall Boyson, where we find positive ways to handle some of life's challenges. I stumbled through until the path was clear.